Thank you for coming today. I'm going to talk about promoting awareness and promoting the identification of work-related symptoms in community physicians, volunteers, and medical students at mobile migrant clinics. My co-author, Michael Lax, is here today, my friend and my colleague, Dr. Lax. And we also did this with Dr. Peter Cronkright, who runs these migrant clinics. So first of all, I'm from Central New York Occupational Health Center, which is an occupational diagnostic and treatment center that's been around since 1988. We're grant-funded through New York State DOH and a member of New York State Occupational Clinic Network, and we're located in Syracuse. An accurate diagnosis of occupational disease is what we're all about, and prevention is a big part of it, including doing screenings, education, and disease and hazard control and worksite evaluations. So we collect a lot of data, and it's part of our mission as well. Education and outreach is a key aspect in our preventive activities, and we like to be able to access workers in high-risk jobs. That's not always so easy, however. One of the things we do is host medical students, residents, nursing and nurse practitioner students, and we do lecturing. Of course, a lot of the unions understand what we are about, and they're very supportive of us, but it's hard to get at workers in smaller and non-union shops and to minority and immigrant workers. So we always have tried to reach these underserved workers, and it's been a perennial goal, and it's been somewhat difficult. We found there was an opportunity to do this when we realized there was a program that actually was part of the medical school with which we're affiliated, Upstate Medical University, the Salt City Hope program, which is the Salt City Health Outreach Program, had been providing free medical care for poor and uninsured people for many years. They were working with the Onondaga County Health Department to do this. And it was an ambulatory care clinic staffed by medical students who were volunteering. And community physicians would come and mentor them. And Salt City, if you didn't know, Syracuse has salt mines, or did at one time. So SC Hope began to expand into migrant care in 2003. And that came about as a result of a public health nurse, Deb Tracy, attending a conference where she met Dr. Bruce Gould, who I understand is a colleague of one of the panel members here, who will be speaking next, who has a lot of experience in these mobile migrant health clinics. So he consulted with a health department and the SC Hope group, and they developed this migrant clinic, which, as I said, started in 2003. Volunteer medical school faculty and community physicians are there, as well as the health department RNs, nurse practitioners, and bilingual outreach workers. So if you can see this, I can't see it very well. That's Dr. Cronkright, and one of the student volunteer coordinators. There's a lot of migrant team members, including community physicians, the outreach worker to the left, and we all stand out in the field and begin to talk to the workers as the clinics are set up. So public health nurses had been working on the farms for 19 years and had established a lot of trust with the farmers. So once this started, the farmers were willing to let it happen because of that long legacy of trust with the public health nurses. So the way this was done, tents were pitched on farms near the migrant housing, and they used portable exam tables, lanterns, and electricity through mechanic's light if the electricity was available. So one box at a time, they'd unload, put up the tent near the housing, get it all set up. There's a portable pharmacy involved in it, an intake area. That's Deb Tracy, actually, who did both the check people out and check people in and make sure everything went well. And here's a couple of the medical students just waiting for the migrant workers to decide whether or not they wanted to participate. Sometimes that took a little while. So they would watch, and they would watch and watch it appear, and sometimes it would be all ready to go for like 45 minutes or an hour, And then everybody would line up, just as you're thinking, maybe we should just close it up for the night. And you can see one of the nurses there. I mean, you bring everything. There's the files, because some of the people are returning. So we found this as an opportunity and asked Dr. Cronkite if we could participate, and he agreed. And in the first season that we were there in 2004, both Dr. Lax, myself, nurse practitioner, and the industrial hygienist from our clinic would attend, primarily as occupational medicine consultants. And what we did mostly on that first year is a lot of observation. Lots of people were doing lots of things, and letting us in made it kind of added another layer of what needed to be done at those clinics. The public health nurses were busy with immunizations, STD, TB stuff, identifying medical and psychosocial needs. The outreach workers were doing a lot of communication, and that's invaluable when the people were able to gain trust of the workers and put them at ease. The students, of course, were setting up the clinic, learning their history and physical exam forms. I said second-year medical students. These are just barely second-year medical students, because it's over the summer as they switch from the first year to the second year. So they had a lot to learn and a lot to practice on. The medical director, Dr. Cronkite, had to make sure everybody was safe and that there was pretty good quality of care in a field situation. And so then we had added on top of that. So every week, there was a core group of student coordinators, but then there'd be various medical students who would volunteer for maybe one or two weeks at a time, and attending physicians from the community who would sort of come and go. So everybody had to learn everything again, week after week. So at the beginning of the sessions, we'd stand around in a circle, and there'd be kind of a brief description of what we did, and they would ask us to just circulate from tent to tent. You saw earlier in the photos there were two or three or four tents set up. And the way we would consult is sometimes we would be asked to come to tents, but other times we just walk up to the tents while a history was in progress and sort of try to find out what was going on. So it was kind of awkward because there were so many people already in the tents. Two medical students, the attending, an outreach worker doing translating, sometimes somebody else, and then us just sort of poking in. So it was kind of awkward. We are training new volunteers each week, sort of starting from scratch with some of the people every week. So a lot of, there were challenges, of course, because there's a lot of information to be gathered. There were papers to be done, HIPAA forms, things like that. Another group would ask for census information to be gathered. There were sincere attempts to maintain confidentiality. And of course, the whole process was slowed by the language barriers and the inexperience in field clinic logistics. So after we did that the first year, we realized it would be really useful to have some Spanish language fact sheets using illustrations, particularly around ergonomics, lifting and carrying, ladder safety, pesticides, and just exercises to actually help treat some of the diagnoses that were made. So we developed a library of these fact sheets and carried them around to a box. And that was one of the ways we became known. We became known as the people who would provide a fact sheet. So, and they, like I said, thought we might be occupational therapists or physical therapists, and to some extent we did play that role. But it made them begin to know us and become familiar with at least part of what we had to offer. So the consult and fact sheet experience was good, but it didn't really help that much in increasing the physician and medical student ability to identify work-related problems. It just seemed to be like an endpoint. Here, give them a fact sheet and that's it. And maybe, if they're lucky, an NSAID or Tylenol or something like that, and that would be about the extent of it. So after the first year, a very simple occupational medicine questionnaire was developed, and it was to be administered in Spanish during the intake process. And as I've tried to emphasize, that intake process is a very, very busy and hectic time at the clinic. and lots of people are trying to get lots of different information for different purposes. We did it the first time actually in 2005, not well explained or introduced by us apparently, because it wasn't well utilized. We would often find that it just wouldn't be completed, that different translators or interpreters wouldn't get the message, and they'd just leave it out, and it was literally lost in the shuffle. I think it was in 2005, we started our first preseason training, and that helped a lot increase our visibility. We invited the student coordinators to our clinic, and we had a nice presentation about occupational hazards for migrant health workers. Training was also done for the student coordinators by the health department, because the students needed to know what the health department needed done. And then there was also cultural competency training offered, which was quite good. The next season, 2006, I spent a lot of my time, instead of circulating to the tents, like I talked about before, and doing that consulting work, I sort of bird-dogged the surveys, and I would stay right at the front where people were coming in, and really explained again and again why it was necessary to fill, to complete this questionnaire so we could begin to get some information. And so I did enforce that, but the downside of that is a lot of questionnaires were completed compared to the year before, but there was a lot less time for the consultation. But it helped increase our acceptance. And the people were actually glad to see us coming. They were really happy to see us coming, actually, after a time. They became so familiar with us. So the elements of the questionnaire included the chief complaint, and then we asked about musculoskeletal pain, skin, eye symptoms, heat-related symptoms, respiratory symptoms, pesticide or chemical exposure, and whether the symptoms were worse at work, better away from work, or if they knew anybody with similar symptoms. So the data was collected by the student coordinators. Unfortunately, we could not get the 2007 data at this time. I believe there was a higher rate of completion of the surveys, but this was not made available to us. Hopefully by next year it will be. We did have some comparison data from the Onondaga County Health Department from their annual report. And I'll preface it by saying, because of the fieldwork conditions, some of the numbers may not be precise. So there were 92 migrant farm workers receiving services over 120 visits. So 29 patients were seen more than once, and 48 out of the 92 did complete the questionnaire. For the musculoskeletal pain part, 32 out of the 48 people, or 67%, did report musculoskeletal pain, about 13% in the hip and lower extremities, 26% in the shoulder and upper extremity pain, and then, of course, the back and neck was 61%. And there's just a little bit more detail on that. There's big low back pain. Skin symptoms, 31% reported symptoms. Mostly the neck and the arms, and somewhat on the back as well. And I would say that as one of the students who described what they would see at the migrant clinic, he says, just regular things, rashes and things like that, without really an appreciation of what might have been work-related with that. 35% reported eye symptoms, and including 19 who had a history of eye injury, and dry eyes, watery, itchy, or irritated eyes. And this is something, we didn't see it so much in 2006, but the year before, we saw a lot of the pterygium, and tried to do some intervention on that, which didn't work out with the glasses. Heat-related symptoms. When we asked if anybody ever felt sick from heat, we only got two positive responses, but then on the rest of the questions, they did have heat-related muscle cramps, nausea, weakness, or lightheadedness. So I'm not sure why they said they never felt sick from the heat, and yet they had those symptoms, which, again, it could be just the way the questions were asked. Nearly everybody was allowed to drink water as they needed to. However, six out of the group said no, they were not permitted to drink water as needed. Let's see. So respiratory symptoms, about 27% reported respiratory symptoms, including stuffy nose, wheezing, cough, and shortness of breath. Four people out of the 48, or 8%, said they had applied pesticides, and three out of four within the previous 2 years. Eight of the people, or 17%, stated they had been present when pesticides were applied. We asked about temporality of symptoms, and 38% responded yes, that their symptoms were worse when they were at work, and that 40% said their symptoms improved when they were away from work. A rather low number, 19%, said they had coworkers with similar symptoms. The response consistency between the chief complaint and how they answered on the occupational survey was consistent about 53% of the time, which with this very simple survey and very limited information says that pretty much of the time they come up with a chief complaint that's consistent with what we did, which is tends to be possibly in a work-related sphere. So there were barriers, apparently, for making a work-related diagnosis. It's not hard to recognize, actually. I think everybody sees that. But the circumstances of migrant farm workers in the U.S. can inspire reluctance to make a work-related diagnosis because of protecting their income and status. Nobody there asks what the status is of the people that come for clinical services. They just get services. It's very important to the health department people who, you know, started all this, and the medical school especially, to protect the access to the farms. They're very worried that if we alienate the farmer, then nobody can get anything done. So that's why they sort of, we make them a little nervous when we come and we ask questions. And some people just, you know, it's the primary care issues that are very important. And of course it's important to deal with the primary care stuff. But sometimes the physicians and medical students just can't see the possibility of occupational issues having an impact. And some are just unfamiliar with it. And then, of course, there's always uncertainty about workers' compensation. In New York State, of course, migrant workers, like any worker, are eligible to apply for workers' compensation. I think there's a big reluctance to do so because then you get in the system. But once you are in the system, you're not supposed to be asked about what your status is as far as being in the country. So the short-term outcomes of our involvement, it's short-term. It's like this is the third year we've been at this, and I think it's going to be kind of a slow process. But we have a better understanding of all types of health issues experienced by this population. And I think there's been an increase in the awareness of occupational health issues among the students, volunteer doctors, and outreach workers and health department nurses because they're very familiar with us and they've begun to use the survey. And I actually see them referring to the survey in the course of the H&P. So we've kind of become a more familiar and accepted face and parts of the team. So what we'd like to do is continue our preseason training and utilize the questionnaire data that I just showed to you in that training. And we'd like to get the volunteer physicians there at the beginning of the year, too. That hasn't happened so far, nor have we been able to talk to the outreach workers. Continue to integrate occupational medicine into the general health services provided there, and to develop more effective measures to treat and prevent these injuries and illnesses among this population. Improved awareness of occupational illnesses and injuries and prevention, and to further evaluate the complete data set once we have access to more of it. So once in a while, we don't have to do tents. Once in a while, we can actually go into these. This is the nicest migrant housing I've seen so far. It's brand new, and it's in an orchard. It's very, very nice, but usually it's tents, sometimes sorting barns. Any questions?
No, we take questions at the end.
Oh, yeah, right.
Sorry. Thank you.